oh my God, I've not only been totally endangered myself, but I've totally endangered some of my closest friends in this community, and they're just trying to live their lives and make money, and I get to run away and they don't.
Today's guest is true wild woman, Ashley Payne, the founder of Tracing Thought Productions, an award-winning filmmaker and photojournalist. From the formidable rainforests of Borneo to the countryside of Kashmir, Ashley immerses herself in the lives of her subjects to go beyond the already told story and help share their stories with the world. Her documentaries are based on Native and Indigenous people's point of view and presented without bias. She and the Tracing Thought team are currently filming in Borneo and Greenland. Find out more about Ashley and her work at tracingthought.com. Now on to the episode. Let's go. I already told Ashley, I'm like, is this going to be a podcast filled with like an episode filled with like lots of laughing? And we, and what did you say?
Yes. And that's the best kind.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because it should all be fun. And if we're not having fun, why are we doing it?
Right. Exactly. Totally agree.
I know. Although I have to say, like, because I'm still reminiscing about this trip. So I just finished a 6-day trip in the Drakensberg Mountains. Oh my gosh, my mouth is already dry. Hang on.
It's because we did so much laughing beforehand.
I know. So I recorded in the wild. I'm doing a Women in the Wild series on myself, and it'll come out next week. Spoiler for you, but
oh, I'm so excited for that.
Right? And it'll already be out by the time this episode comes out. So I'm still actually processing, but I really think you can do hard stuff and have fun at the same time, like physical difficulties, emotional difficulties, disappointment, and it can all still be like an enjoyable time and be fun. And that's what I really wanted to experience, was just like being present in the moment and really enjoying the whole, like the entirety of it all. And I feel like you have a lot of these experiences.
Yeah. And I think fun in itself is so subjective, because what I think is a great time and I want to do for weeks on end, others may not. Like, and like, it's like hiking. I think that's the easiest thing to compare it to. Some people absolutely love hiking, and then others do not understand and cannot get a grip with why people want to hike up a mountain and be sweaty and, you know, miserable just to hike back down. So it just depends on who you are.
I know. There was a time in my, like on the last day, and I was getting towards the end, I'm like, I don't think this is fun anymore. Because we did 4,500 feet in about 10 miles, no, 10K, which is whatever, 7-ish miles or whatever. And that's a lot of elevation.
Yeah.
And so at the end, my knees were just like dying. Yeah. But I knew I could keep going. But at the same time, I'm like, I'm still like, okay, I can still enjoy the process. I can still like the process of enjoying it became more like observing my body do amazing stuff. And that's actually really cool.
Mm-hmm. It's like a switch, you know, when that switch happens in your brain, when you start to feel pain and you're doing something for work or you're recording something like you were, and then all of a sudden you're in pain, and then your appreciation goes to, okay, I'm just going to appreciate that my body can do this. I'm still up here. I'm still rocking it. Like, I'm still climbing. My knees are bomb. They are going to make it through. Just keep cheerleading them on.
Right. Exactly. I had to keep reminding myself. I'm like, my body was made for this. I can totally do this, and it's not over yet. So keep being present and don't make dumb mistakes, because the minute I'm like in a hurry to be in the future, then I would start making like some really dumb mistakes. And I would always just check in with myself, like all the way
down the hill.
So. Yes. Yeah. Learning and listening to my body is something that I learned so hard in the past 10 years that I think everyone does. You know, you go through this really big moment where you're like, okay, I need to start listening to the thing that holds my brain and my heart and my lungs mm-hmm. more carefully. And I definitely had some experiences that made me do that.
So here's the thing, Ashley, I have been wanting to chat with you for so long because when I talked with Taylor Stone, I know you guys have both been working on this Greenland documentary. I've been following it from, I don't know, so long ago. And every time Taylor's like, you've got to talk with Ashley, you've got to talk with Ashley. And now I'm talking with you and I'm just so thrilled.
Oh, thank you. I'm so excited to be on because any podcast that just has women in the title, it's like, yes, let's talk.
Right. And I also want to say, like, when I think of a wild woman, I actually think of you with your like crazy hair. And I mean, it's gorgeous. But I think of you in like so many different wild places. And Wild and Ashley totally go together in my head. So I'm like, of course, it's natural that you should come on and talk with us and tell us some of your wild behind the scenes experiences, you know?
Thank you. I feel like you and all of my friends and family would really get along because but I need to shout out Taylor really quick because Taylor is just one of my biggest mm-hmm. cheerleaders. I love her. She's my co-producer on the Greenland film that we've been working on for more than four or five years, which is unbelievable. But documentaries, they don't seem to end. And she actually introduced me to you, to this entire landscape community. Like, I had no idea it existed. And now I have so many friends and I love it because y'all aren't necessarily in my niche and it's great perspective and conversations. And that's all due to Taylor. It's awesome. And I'm really, really thankful for her.
It is awesome. She's such a go-getter. I love her so much. And it's always fun to have friends that kind of cross over and do different things. And I don't see how that's a bad thing to expand the community of the people that you know. So that's always good. It's always a good thing. You've been to quite a few different places. I know you've done work, obviously, most recently in Greenland. Most recently in Greenland, but also in Borneo. And I don't know, where else have you been? Tell me the different places that you've been. We want to know.
Oh man, I've traveled to over 45 countries. I've been to most all of them in Southeast Asia and just really all over the place. Traveling was like big, big priority for me out of college, and it was for me in middle school, so it took me a while to be able to save up to do it. But when I did, it really became my life, and that's exactly what I wanted it to be since I was a very little girl. So my dreams came true, and I'm so thankful for it every day. And as I traveled and realized I didn't just want to be a nomadic traveler, which there's nothing wrong with that, but I just wanted to find a little more purpose since I am a photojournalist and was a photojournalist first. I started to spend, like you said, more time in certain places that really were true to me and started to make films, little short documentaries to go alongside my photojournalism. And everything happened so organically, but I was doing this really in a lot of places, but the place that resonated the most and had the biggest impact on me and still has and still does every day is Borneo, Indonesia. So I got asked to go make a film there for a really amazing company called Forest Smoothie, and they have a huge like green smoothie initiative to growing trees and replanting trees and areas that are being destroyed from deforestation. And so they asked me to go make a film with them in Borneo. I had never been. They said, we'll buy your plane ticket, you know, we'll buy your food. And that's basically it. Just it's your opportunity to come. And at that time in my life, I was taking every single chance, every single opportunity. And so I did. And I went, and that completely changed my life because I saw some not so great stuff being done to a very small Dayak, which is an indigenous group in Borneo, Indonesia community, they're already dealing with a lot of colonialism, you know, a lot of deep frustrations with their land being stolen out from under them for palm oil plantations and illegal gold mining operations. And then I witnessed while I was there actually a photo group come in. I'm going to be very pretty vague because a lot of these people, you know, the ones I liked or I'm still friends with and I don't want to trash anyone, but they were taking advantage of the community and they were not giving them, you know, how much they should have been in terms of money. And I developed a really close relationship with the family. And from there, like everything grew. I learned that I need to stick around for longer than 2 weeks to understand people, to understand what they're going through. You can't just jump in and expect to know. And so I've been working in Borneo for about 6 or 7 years now, and no longer than that, but it doesn't matter. I've been for a long time and learning about these people's lives, and they've become my family. I've been adopted into the tribe and they're like literally my best friends. I have a date with my sister tonight. We got a FaceTime because she got a new boyfriend and I'm so excited to talk to her. But yeah, that's what you have to do. And that's what I do. And that's what I'm doing with the Greenland Project. It's why it's taking so long is because Taylor and I just kept learning new information and more information and to tell the story right and to tell it how it should be told through the eyes of the people and not through a biased narrative. You have to stick around for a while.
My husband introduced me to the term called presentism. Like it's like our perspectives now where we are and translating that to, you know, other people and other, you know, or even previous times and cultures. And for sure, like we all have, you know, different perspectives now, you know what I mean? And it is, I think it is important to get to know the other cultures and not necessarily make assumptions about what they need or who they are, or how they want to be treated or not, you know, and that all takes time and people like you to go there and then tell us the story. Cause I'm not necessarily going to spend the time to go to Borneo and get to know the Indonesian people and find out about them. We need that to come from other people. Although it does take somebody to do this work. And so I love when people like you are passionate about specific peoples and are able to go there and do the work to bring us their stories. So let's talk more about that. You were forced to leave Borneo. You said you were there in Indonesia in 2019, not Borneo, but oh yeah. And you were there in 2019 and you were forced to leave the country. Will you tell us about that?
In Borneo, I went back a couple of times and then decided to leave my house in Bali. I sold everything and then my husband went back to America and I went to Borneo because I felt like I really needed to tell some stories there, help some stories be told. And that is what I did. And then I got really invested in the illegal gold mining operations that were taking place in one of my friend's villages. And I was devastated by what was going on. Chinese government and a lot of other governments, Taiwan, it was these bigger countries in Southeast Asia that, you know, have the money to come in and take what is not theirs, in my opinion, but that's okay. And the fight for people's land and the fight for the right of those minerals and who they actually belong to. Do they belong to the people that live there that was their land for, you know, generations and generations behind them? And so I was very passionate about this conversation. I went out with one of my close friends and we documented it together. And he was making his own film and we created Filmmakers of Borneo and a couple of other really fun initiatives while we were doing it. But then the police found out and Indonesia does not have freedom of speech. And what we were doing was documenting something that was illegal. And of course I knew this the entire time and we were trying to be very quiet about it, but the people who didn't want us there really found out, and then they started knocking on doors in all of the villages surrounding us, looking for me and looking for my friends. And we were just trying to wrap up the documentary so I could leave and have something to go home with. So I did. And then I literally had to get in the car the next morning. It was like, it's kind of like a blur in my brain now. I'm just like, I don't even remember. Was I crying? Like, what did I just run? Like, it happened in less than 24 hours. And I knew I just had to get out of there. So I didn't end up in prison in Indonesia, which, if you know, is very not a great place to end up in prison. You might be stuck there for the rest of your life. I was very concerned about getting flagged at the airport. So I had my husband on the phone with me while I was going through passport and customs. And then they actually, my passport got flagged and it got beeped red. And then I got sent in for questioning and it freaked me out so much. I was almost fainted. I was like, okay, here it is. I'm going to prison. Like, that's it. And I was like telling my husband, I was like, I did something very illegal. I was like, I'm going to have to explain it. But then I remember they just asked me, it's like seriously a blur, but they just asked me some questions about my bags. It was the craziest thing. It's like, they asked me some questions about my bags and then they just let me go through. And I was like, okay, we're good here. And I didn't go back. Everyone told me like high and low across this entire West Kalimantan area. My friends were like, you should probably not come back for about 2 to 3 years. Everyone in the industry was saying like, don't, just to let the water settle. So I didn't. But then when I did return, I returned last Christmas and spent Christmas with my family in Borneo. And you can watch that film. The links are all to it on my website, truesinkthought.com. It's a very short film, but now we're conjuring up a bigger film to go back and accomplish. So I'm really excited.
That's exciting and also really scary. I cannot imagine you trying to like, okay, I'm just picturing you trying to keep your cool during this questioning, right? And this internal stress, like, oh no, is this where, what will happen after this? And then it's just like a non-event. And maybe that happens to us so often that we psych ourselves out so much, you know, but we do always need to be careful and be aware and be on and also prepare for that kind of stuff too, you know? So, I just can't imagine. Okay. You also said when you left there, you went to Taiwan.
Yeah. I'm like, why did I write this down, Ashley? Like, you just sound like you're just getting into trouble. You're a hoodlum. Like, what are you doing?
Well, truthfully, when we do these kinds of things and we go to these places, you know, things happen. And maybe there are sometimes you go and come back and it's nothing. And then there are sometimes where like everything kind of goes wrong, you know, and this kind of feels like that time.
Yes, this is exactly that time. And I don't think I would have been as freaked out about the airport situation if, honestly, you know, it's like whenever you go backpacking or on a huge trip and your family is like kind of psyching you out more than you're psyched out. You're like, I'm fine. Like, this is, I do this every day. Like, I usually don't tell you about it because then you start making these thoughts, you know, bubble in my head. I'm like, no, I'm good. Like, what are you talking about? But in this instance, the whole community was so concerned about getting me out of there. They were all deeply freaked out. All the wives were very mad at me. Because it was like their stress was in my stress and my body was feeling it all to such an extreme. And I felt like, oh my God, I've not only been totally endangered myself, but I've totally endangered some of my closest friends in this community. And they're just trying to live their lives and make money. And I get to run away and they don't. And I was really coming down with all those feelings. And it was a really bad place that I was in. Therefore, I think I internalized that stress and I already was sick and did not know, left the airport to go to Taiwan. I was actually seeing a friend that was on that side of the world at the time and we met. And then I started to realize I was really getting sick and I kept telling my friend, I was like, I'm really not feeling great day after day. 4 days into Taiwan, he left because he had to get back to work and I was walking down the street and my husband was telling me like, go to a doctor. And I didn't because that's what you do. You know, you're like, I'm fine. It's going to be fine. And I collapsed on the side of the street and a man in a taxi driver actually, like, I remember vaguely seeing them and, yeah, they got me to the hospital and I had blood poisoning. So it was just like one thing after the other. And then I was hospitalized by myself. And I was really mad because what if I had said or like recognized it or was willing to, you know, come to terms with it a couple days earlier, then I would have had a friend there with me. But my friend had already left and I just put myself in this situation by myself. And it was rough. It was hard to overcome. But then for some reason after that, I was in Taiwan for about 3 weeks dealing with that because I couldn't travel. And then I still didn't go home. I was like, Ashley, you need to go film because I had another plan to go film somewhere else. So when you, that's what, oh, this all comes back to, I need to, this was the last 10 years was just re.
Oh, wait, I can't even imagine your mother right now.
Oh my God, she hates me.
Do you know what Ashley's doing?
She
was just sick.
So
she's not even going to come home.
My mom and my husband. Oh my God.
Okay. Okay, crazy girl. What did you do next?
I like don't even want to say. This is all like, okay, present Ashley is looking back on past Ashley. And I've also let my mom know this. I'm so sorry, Mom. I was insane. I don't know what was in my brain. I don't know what I was trying to prove or what I was going through in my life. But like, obviously, I just didn't want to stop.
And, yeah. And there you go, Mom.
I'm better now.
Okay, so seriously, where did you go next?
You're going to think I went to India and then I went to Bangladesh for another job. And then sometime after that, I was in Nepal and COVID hit when I was in Bangladesh and Nepal. So that forced me to stop. You know, a lot of people say COVID made them settle down. It is a real hard truth for me. Like it actually, I was going to stay in Nepal and wait it out. My husband was so, now I'm looking back and I'm like, wow, he probably was really mad at me. He called the U.S. Embassy in Kathmandu and made sure I was on the first evacuation flight out of Nepal back to America because they were only doing two. And I was still like, it was my birthday. And I was like, I'm fine. It's my birthday. I was like, I'm chilling. I know everything's shut down, but like, it's got to open up sooner or later. Like, I'll be fine. I came back home and then I learned just how insane from an outsider's perspective I was being.
You know, we all sometimes need the other voice going, come on, this is what you should do. You know, mm-hmm. I was super sick once and my husband goes, you're really sick. I was like, I just need to rest a little bit more. He's like, no, you're going to the doctor or like, and we never do this. We just let each other take care of our stuff. You're going mm-hmm. to the doctor. I already made you an appointment. I went there and they're like, if you had come in any later, we'd be sending you to the ER because you have like serious pneumonia. But instead, we're just going to make you drop your pants and give you a steroid shot and send you home to heal. And I'm like, you know, with a bunch of drugs. But anyway, my point is we need sometimes other people to like help us like look at the whole picture and go, hey, no. This yeah. is not what you're doing.
Yeah. Bada bing.
So thank you, Ashley's husband. Yeah, that's yes. right. Yeah.
It's why family first. Is that the saying? Because they know what's up. They'll tell you the truth. But I did really learn a lot of like what my body can take. Because as I kept going and learning more, I made myself prouder of myself. And then I was like, Ashley, if COVID hadn't hit, you know, in a fairy tale world, I was making a very, very interesting documentary that I can't get back to in Nepal about the Sherpas who climb Everest. And I was working with them and the Nat Geo team. And I just felt like at the time I was on such a, I climbed a mountain, you know, for a year. I'd been climbing this mountain. I was sick and desperate. And I just really, really wanted to be at a certain place in my career. But the world said, nope. They said, Ashley, take a step back. You'll get there another time. And that's okay. But it was hard.
Yeah, it's amazing what we can push ourselves to do when we feel really passionate about something.
Mm-hmm. Yes, without a doubt.
I think a lot of us have these ideas of what we're capable of, and then we push ourselves past that, you know, in the name of, you know, based on our desires. I mean, so much of what we do is like mind over matter, you know, except sometimes when our husbands say you should get on that plane.
Yeah.
I think it's so interesting. You just seem like this small person. Maybe, I don't know how tall you are, but the fact that you're just out there in the wild, like climbing mountains and doing all this stuff is like totally incredible to me. I mean, maybe I won't be that wild ever.
Hey, don't say that.
But I do. You never know. I know I shouldn't. No, I'm not going to climb Everest, but hey, I don't have to slow down just because I'm going to be grandma this year. Maybe grandma, by the way, Ashley.
Congratulations. Oh my God.
I got a couple gray hairs. It's all good.
Oh my gosh. I'm an aunt of 6 and I just want them to keep having more because I'm loving it.
Isn't it so fun? Are you like the fun aunt?
I try to be until they say I'm being too much fun and then they won't let their kids hang out with me.
Oh, this tracks.
You can see that, right?
Yeah, I get this. Yeah. Right. Welcome to Aunt Ashley's Daredevil Preschool.
Yes. Let's see if you can jump over this rock. No, I would never. I'm excited for you to become a grandma, though. I can see it.
Right. So I also asked you, give me some examples or one, but you gave me a couple of the craziest moments you've experienced. And I want to start with the Dyak healer in Borneo. And I want to say like the reason why we're talking about all these things is because you go to these, like you go to these places to be with the people, to photograph them, to document and then this stuff just happens to you. And so, we heard about this birthday party in Greenland with Taylor. You know, there's all going to be all these stories that you have from the people that are very specific to specific peoples. So will you tell me about this particular crazy, interesting instance?
Yes. And I need to preface by saying I try to avoid, if my mom is listening, I try to avoid these situations as much as humanly possible, I promise.
Right?
I swear I do. But then, and in the moment, they don't seem crazy to me, you know, or, you know, that word is so here or there, like crazy is crazy to someone and then not to another. And so that's for me in the moment.
Yeah, let's just say like abnormal, maybe not abnormal, but unsafe. Like it doesn't necessarily feel like unsafe in the moment. Like we do have to use our intuition for these things. And so it sounds crazy afterwards, but maybe you were using your intuition in the moment and you're like, okay, this is okay. But I don't even know what it is. So give us a little backstory and then tell us what happened.
Okay. Yeah. Intuition can bite you in the butt. So I went back to Borneo, as I said, for Christmas time this last year, like to spend Christmas and just to see my friends. It's the first time I had been back since I left very abruptly 2 years prior. And one of my closest friends who I was talking about, I did the palm or the illegal gold mining filming with, he was also a filmmaker. He got married and had children while I was away. So he just had a little baby boy and they were having a very special ceremony in his wife's village. And so I took a bus to go, be a part of that ceremony. And it was really beautiful. It took me about 4 or 5 hours to get there and to part of the jungle I had not been yet. So I was very excited and saw one of my best friends. And then the ceremony was welcoming the child's first steps onto the land. And that's what the ritual was basically about, to summarize it. And so since it was also my first steps onto the land, I was a part of the ceremony. Didn't know that was going to happen at all. I thought I was just going to visit my friend and be there and support and take some photos for him so he could have this moment, you know, captured. And all of a sudden I'm in the ceremony and this does seem to keep happening. So I'm used to it. I go with it and I do my part and they take the chicken blood and they put it on our heads and we have this huge moment where the whole village is in a circle in one of the main houses, the community houses. And then they bring out the food. And my best friend, he is very proud that we were eating monkey in this ceremony. They had caught a monkey, and the monkey was from the north, and someone brought it down. And this was a monkey that you could eat, apparently. You know, it wasn't illegal to hunt it. They needed to be hunting it where they were. And he's explaining it to me. Obviously, he knows Americans and people have premonitions and not good feelings about eating monkey. It is like eating a human, some would say. It's like, it is something that I would probably go back and think more about. But in the moment, he's explaining it to me. I do not want to be insulting. I am the person that will eat whatever is put in front of me to make sure that I'm not insulting anyone. Like, and I usually 99% of the time love the food. And this is one of those instances where I had the tiniest bite of monkey, the tiniest bite. Anyone who I've told this story to after is like, what in the world were you thinking? And I was like, this is the intuition moment. You know, if you were there, I think you would have done the same thing. It's just like, it felt like what I needed to do. So I did it. And let's fast forward 24 hours later, maybe 48. I was completely not moving. Like, I was basically nailed to the ground with food poisoning. I've had a lot of food poisoning in my life. And this one was like complete dizziness and nausea, like something had taken over my body, complete, like these huge gusts of humidity that were going inside my skin that would just profusely sweat and then like stop. And they were calling it something, which I can't remember right now, but it's definitely in my notes from this trip. But it was like, they call it, so when this happens to you in food poisoning, and it's like the forest is entering your body and then it's trying to exit, but it's trying to wash out what you have eaten, and it's purposefully happening to you. The healers start coming over. There's no doctors in this area. They start to massage my stomach, put rubs on me, things that are forged, and also something I've dealt with before, because I broke my toe when I was there the previous time. So we've been through the foraging and the oils and stuff, but nothing was fixing me. And Christmas was coming up, and everyone's like, we got celebrations to do, Ashley, you need to get better. And I was like, I agree. Like, what do we got to do here? Because I'm so sorry, and I do not want to be sick right now. And then we go to one of the rarest, most predominant healers in the area. There's only about like a handful. You can count on your hands how many there are left in Borneo that actually still speak with the spirits of the forests and the people. Like, believe they have a deep, deep connection to the ground, to the trees, and to the life that's happening around you, so they can control the things that are also happening in your body and talk to it and help relieve pain and get it out of you. And so I walk into his little hut with my sister, Desi, and we sit down. Mom was there too, because she was helping me. She was starting to get concerned. My Dayak mom, go moms. And, the three of us were sitting there. He asked me to lay down.
Right.
And then, yes. Oh my gosh. And I was telling my mom I'm okay. My American mom, my real mom. And letting her know what was going on. But I lay down on the ground in his home. He starts to wave his hands over my stomach, like in a very beautiful way. It was just like, he told me to close my eyes. I'm just like kind of out of it. I'm just like laying there, like, just please make me feel better. At this point, I'm like, whatever anyone can do, just do it and let's try. And then he waved his hand over like this into like I know we're in audio, so, but like in a twister type tornado motion to point all of his fingers at my belly button. And then I was watching at this point, and then he just pulls this little black stone, like, I don't want to be like totally gross, but it was weird and gross to experience. So I'm just going to be totally clear and honest. It was like a rock or mixed with a lint ball of like black gunk. You know, I don't know. It's the weirdest thing. Crazy. He just puts it in his hand, and then he hands it to mom, and she took it, and I'm staring at this thing that just came out of my belly button, and I could feel it coming out of my belly button. It was a very insane emotion and feeling to experience. And then I went to go grab it, which I thought was very unique. I went to go grab it because I was like, what the is this? I was like, what is this? I need to examine this. Like, all I want to do is touch it and be like, what is this? And they wouldn't let me touch it because then the energy might go back into my body. So I was not allowed to touch it. And I walked out of that house like 30 seconds later and I was just like, what in the world just happened? I was like, Desi. And she goes, she just looks at me, I remember, and she goes, I know.
Did you feel fine afterwards?
I felt so much better in a way that was...
That's so crazy.
Mm-hmm. I do remember, you know, this is when you call your husband. You're like, okay, need to tell you what just happened.
I got
today.
A new one for you, honey.
Yep.
And no way could you ever, ever dream this one up. Sit down for this.
Yes. You know, he used to travel with me. And now I'm starting as I get older to realize why he stopped.
He's like, I can't take it. But, yeah. My stress levels yeah. can't take it. You do it. Oh, gosh. Okay. All yeah. right. So what were you going to say? Like,
just that it's just that you ate a monkey, Ashley. Why would you do that? That was his first comment to me, was like, Ashley, what in the world were you thinking? And then everyone in my hometown village, you know, where my like, I say family because that's just what we call each other, but my sister Desi and mom and everyone, they were all like, Ashley, you don't eat a monkey. Like, that's not what you do. But in this different village, totally different ethics and ideas around rituals, totally different area of Borneo, they do. And so it was very interesting to experience those differences.
Oh my goodness. I'm almost speechless, to be honest. I'm still picturing that thing coming out of your belly button. And the fact that you could feel it, like it wasn't just didn't seem like a figment of your imagination, you know? Mm. I think some things are just going to be mysteries to us forever, you know?
Yeah, beautiful mysteries. I love this one.
Right.
I'm like, I wish I could relive it in a way, because I'm like, I wouldn't to evaluate this more if I knew it was going to happen. I would have been paying a lot more attention, let me tell you, in filming.
Spoken like a true photographer, photojournalist, videographer. I wish I was filming this or had someone else do it.
Like, yeah, yeah.
I actually suspect. Well, I was going to say, I don't know if they would have let you, but also I feel like you could have conned them, like cajoled them into it.
Yeah, Desi would have.
Like, with your personality.
I could have told her, like, Desi, but I didn't know what was going to happen. She didn't even know what was going to happen. We both walked out and just looked at each other, and she was like, I know. Like, it was just like, wow, wow.
I love that she was like, what?
And I live here.
So crazy. Right. Yes, exactly. Oh, my gosh. Oh, okay. I'm just going to be like, thinking about this for a long time.
I'm sorry.
This is so great. I'm so thrilled I heard this one. Okay, so some of the other craziest moments that you've experienced have been recently in Greenland. And so one of the things I asked you before we came on, this is where I ask you this question. So one of the things I asked you before you came on, because I remember talking with Taylor, and I think in the podcast episode, and I'm going to link it in this episode, I think she says, oh yeah, Ashley, she needs all of these like warm clothes because she's going to spend, you know, part of the winter on the sea ice with a polar bear hunter. Right. So you can tell us more about that. But I also was like, after she told this, I was thinking, if you have all of that stuff on, how does one pee? Like, how does a girl pee? And you said, ask me on the podcast. So anyway, this is your moment, Ashley. My inquiring mind wants to know how you did this. This is kind of like a magic feat to me.
Well, this is hilarious because I will tagline I did not pee alone. Okay? It was impossible. So that's why I was like, I've got to explain this. It was like I was wearing my wedding dress every single day, day after day after day. Yep. You know, when you have your friends all holding it up.
Yes. And I was thinking, does that make you not want to drink a lot? Like, were you constantly dehydrated? I mean, you know what I mean? Yeah. Maybe water is more scarce to get out there because you're on sea ice and it's a little trickier anyway.
I'm glad we talked about all this crap I've put myself through, because with Greenland and in my recent years of filming and being in this field of work, I've completely stopped negotiating hydration. And I've never really negotiated hydration because I really, really like to be hydrated and drink a lot of water. But food intake, you know, healthy food and my vitamins, I just do not take those things lightly anymore. People might see me travel now and see the amount of vitamins I take and be like, are you okay? But no, I'm just, you know, green with health right now because that's what I realized I need to do. And that's what I was doing in Greenland. So I wasn't sick or ill, and I was drinking all the water. I was like, I'm not gonna, you know, not drink water to not have to pee. But as you said, yeah, Taylor and I, we raised that money to keep me warm. I was very warm on this trip. Everything went wonderfully. So if any of our donors are listening, I am just so thankful. And Bree, yes, you were part of this whole journey. It was miraculous and amazing and a big success. So you'll be hearing a lot about that over the next year as I edit it. But peeing, the main topic here, most importantly, is layers and layers. So, you know, fleece layer, merino layer, another fleece layer, and then down layer, if not two down layers. And then I was actually wearing polar bear skins. So pants that were made out of polar bear fur, Kamiks on my feet, and then a really big top jacket that was also made out of fur and stuffed with cotton. And this is not typical for females to wear. Of course they do. If you're a hunter in Greenland, there's no choice. Like, you have to stay warm, and this is how you stay warm. So, but typically it is men hunting, it is men wearing these clothes, and it's much easier for them to pee. And my hunter and I, we both talked about this right when I was putting it on. He had never had a female wear the clothes filming with him or anything like this the whole time. So he's had men, and they can just, you know, pee easily through the polar bear suits. So at first I would go behind an iceberg and I start to take everything off. And by this point, it's taken me like a minute to get everything off. And then I have to use the bathroom. All I did by myself. That's not the part that I needed necessarily help with. But then afterwards, I pull my 6, 7, 8 layers back on, depending on how cold it was that day. And the pants are 3 sizes too big. You know, even with my layers, they're made for men with bigger bodies, and I'm pretty petite. And so they were huge, and they had suspenders going around the back that would hold them up. But you don't want your metal suspenders on the outside of your layers, because there's a lot of science behind being in the cold, because then your hands will, you know, burn from touching the metal suspenders metal. And so to best describe this, I just pull it all up. I'm holding it like a little 5-year-old child coming out of the bathroom and doesn't know how to operate their clothing for the first time. And then I'm waddling across the ice back to the dog sled to Olenguak, my hunter, who was very quickly became one of my best friends in the whole world. And he's dying laughing. I'm dying laughing. And I'm like, he looks at me and he was like, do you need help? It was impossible for me to get the suspenders back over my shoulder with my entire top layer like locked in, like I am an astronaut going to space. I mean, I have 2 beanies on, the hood up, my hair is perfectly braided into my merino wool, you know, first layer. And so it is a like perfect scientific fashion piece I'm dealing with here. And then he had to help me. We got very personal very quickly, get the suspenders through my layers underneath and dressed. And dare I say, he did not do this just once. Oli and I had this beautiful moment every single time I peed for 6 weeks.
I just want to give him an applause.
Yes. For doing he deserves that. It.
Okay. Right. I have a question. This is not the first time this has been brought up on this podcast. So if, you know, anyway, bodily functions are actually super important when we're out in the wild. But I have a pee style, you know, the little funnel. Do you know about this? It's not a funnel. Yes. It's kind of like a trough. Okay. Would that have helped you?
By the time my pee, to be TMI, left my body and then in like touched the ice, it was already freezing. So it just felt like that would have left something else I would have had to deal with in this situation when I'm trying to not like fall onto the ice and I'm very cold and I'm out in the elements, you know, when I've pulled down all my clothes, like for everyone to see. I just feel like I've considered getting that funnel on so many occasions and then don't, because it just seems like one more thing in my, but am I, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I would have wanted it.
I don't know. I'm a pee style advocate. So
yeah.
So I just went backpacking with like five other guys plus three male porters plus our male guide. So there were 10 people and I was the only woman. And that thing, one of the guys was like, I think it was Jeff. He was like, I can see how that thing is like super helpful for you, you know, because I could just walk like 20 feet away and stand to pee and they didn't see anything. And then I just walked back. Like it just looked like I was one of the guys and then I walked back. So you don't know what I'm talking about, do you?
Great. Big what? Wait, I didn't think that you could stand and do it. Am I just now realizing that?
I'm going to send you a photo of me.
I...
I'm not going to put it on the blog.
Put it on the blog. Put it on the blog.
I will. Yes, I'm going to put it in my backpacking gear when I do my blog post. Okay. So, y'all, this is like the best thing ever. So, it's I bought it back in 2021 because I went to Capitol Reef National Park with another friend of mine, and we stayed in the park when my friend David Hunter, he was doing an artist in residency there. And I knew I was going to be it's fine if I'm with my husband, you know, but if I'm just like, if you're in the desert and walking with another guy, like where are you going to see a tree? I mean, there were actually plenty there. I just didn't know. And when I found this thing, my friend bought it. She goes, oh, I need that too. And so we bought them and she was like, I'm converted. And I'm like, and so I just tell every woman about it now because I have two of them now in like little waterproof cases. So one goes in my regular, like just to hike around backpack. And then one goes in my camera bag. And then sometimes when I'm road tripping, I'll put it in my car because then some, you know, if you're driving in deserted places, you could drive a couple of hours and not see a place.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
To stop.
I just pull over and go quite often.
Right, right. But with this, I just step out of my car, open the door, I pee, and then I get back in. I don't have to drop my drawers. You know, anyway, it's, yeah.
I have a face of shock for anyone who can't see me because...
Her mouth is agape. You know what? I have a feeling you're like, why didn't I know about this before I went to Greenland? I should have asked the question before you went. Dang it.
Exactly what I'm thinking. Time. Exactly what I'm thinking. I think I've seen photos of them. They're advertised to me. You know, my Instagram knows the crap that I do. And so it really hits home with that stuff and it'll give me ads. But I just never have seen someone using it. I think that's where my key was gone. I was like, I don't really know. That just seems like more messy. And yeah, it's helpful. But like standing and peeing, that's a whole other ball game.
I know. And anyway, this one is the best.
Okay.
I also haven't used any others, but I'm just telling you it's the best. So, I'm sure all the guys that are listening to these podcasts are like, why does she keep talking about peeing? It's because this is so important.
And revolutionary.
It actually makes things. Yeah, it totally is. And even other guys that I'm with, they're like, wow. So
yeah.
Anyway.
Send me the link. Send me the link. You should be sponsored by them in the best way.
That's right. I'll go set up my Amazon affiliate account now.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Oh, this was so fun. Ashley, we probably need to end, but
oh yeah,
I don't want to. Can we just talk the rest of the day and tell stories?
I know, right? Oh my God.
That'd be so much fun.
It would. I feel like there's so much to share from Greenland that I just got back from, but you know, I still have to edit this film. And I also going to just leave y'all with a cliffhanger because I don't want to talk too much about it. I'm already sharing so much on my on the production site's Instagram that you don't have something to go see yet. So I'm just like teasing you with blank, you know, availability. So just hang tight. It'll be out soon.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, whenever you get to it. Okay. So in that vein, will you tell us what the name of it is and how we can find out more, how we can support you, all of those things?
The name of the film is Hila Kahimi, which means there's several loose translations, but it means but the weather in the most general sense. So in Greenland, in the north, west Greenland, where we're filming in the northernmost settlement in the world, where I've filmed for the last 2 years now, they live based on the weather completely, not just about climate change, just their everyday life. You know, they're hunting for their food. They are living in the harshest conditions on the planet. And the hunters cannot go out. The females cannot do their jobs. No one can work if the weather is, you know, the slightest bit off. And so that's why we named the film Hila Kahimi. A hunter told it to me and I shared it with Taylor, and then I was like, this is it. I told her, I was like, we're not even debating this. I was like, this is the name of this film. It has to be. It's too perfect. And the film is about sustainable hunting in this area of the world and the conversation of continuing to live off the land, even though these are species that the world is fighting to keep not – they're writing the endangered list, like polar bears and narwhals, seals, reindeer, etc. And these people have been hunting them and eating them for hundreds of years and generations after generations. And then the government, the Danish government who colonized Greenland, and is telling these people and giving them rules on what they can and can't do to a sense that is detrimental to their traditions and their ethics and like what they see is healthy, you know. And then they have another country telling them, no, this is what's healthy, drinking a glass of milk a day, etc., etc., when they don't even have dairy introduced into their body systems. You know, they have now. Like, these people are very, very, very much so in the modern world of, like, they're not, like, you know, walking around naked. They're not doing anything like that. It makes them different than anyone else on the planet. They're just trying to live their lives, and people are telling them how to and how not to, which is what this documentary is about, the conversation between the government and the people through the eyes of the people. So you'll see both perspectives, and by the end of the film, you'll be able to make your own judgments on how you feel without someone telling you how to feel. Sorry, that was a lot.
I love that. No, it was great. No, that's a great description. And I know one of the things that you wrote in your form, because I ask about like emotions in your, you know, in your work, and you're like, I'm a photojournalist. So I just tell the story and then you get to have the emotion. And so I feel like that's so true to you and what you do in your work. And also, like you get to have all your own experiences and emotions, like awe when someone pulls something out of your stomach, or you know, or like fear and stress when you're getting stopped by passport control, you know, in another country. So I really loved this.
Thank you, Bree. Thank you so much for saying that too, because I do feel like I'm these days talking about myself a lot, but the stories aren't necessarily about me, but I know that I'm there, you know, and it's not something that we can ignore. So it's really fun to get to share these crazy happenings. And I appreciate you listening to me and going along on this ride and supporting this project. We need you guys. We need support. We love the family that's behind it and that was created from it. And we appreciate all of y'all.
Well, you guys have done an amazing job of like pushing for your project to move forward. I think anytime we're passionate about something, you got to shout with a loud voice about how much it needs to be done. And you guys are doing that. So kudos to you and Taylor, because I know Taylor's listening. So, I know you guys both just spent some time there, and yeah, we all can't wait to see more. And thank you for sharing your behind, because so often we see the work that got done that's in front of the camera, and we don't often hear what happened to you or, you know, in your world behind the camera as you were, you know, trying to, you know, do all these things. So thank you. Thank you for coming on and sharing. And I feel like we need to meet in person with Taylor and do something wild.
That's what I was going to say. I was like, when the film comes out, maybe the three of us can talk, because yes, it's been, I could keep talking, but I won't, but it's been amazing. If anyone wants to watch more behind the scenes of what I've been talking about, Greenland, if you check out, I think Bree's going to put it in the links, the Greenland replay highlight on my production channel's Instagram is like sharing my point of view from filming this documentary over this winter 2024. So people can check that out if they want.
That's awesome. Yeah. You've been sharing stuff in your stories and stuff. So it's awesome. Yeah. All right. Yeah. I'll put all the links to everything. If you want to go check out Ashley and her production company, Tracing Thought. And next time, Ashley.
Until next time.
That's right. All right. See you later. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone. Thank you.
Come with me on my next adventure. Be a wild woman and join me on one of my small group photography escapes in places like the Cypress Swamps of East Texas or White Sands, New Mexico. Go to wildwomanphotography.com for all the details. While you're there, you can check out featured wild women, episode transcripts, and more. Oh, and I'd love for you to support this podcast and all these incredible wild women in photography by leaving a review or sharing with a friend. Thank you so much for listening.